Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast, where we interview growers from all over the world, both beginners and experts, seeking to learn more about what they know about gardening and how they do things in their garden. What's up, everybody? For you that don't know me, my name is Chris, aka Mr. Grow It, and you're tuned into the Garden Talk Podcast. This is episode number 123. In this episode, I interview Mr. Nice Guy. He has been gardening for 5 years and is big into DIY gardening. He has created his own DIY hydroponic setup at home. He talks all about the hydroponic setup and how he grows in it. He also talks about some common problems and solutions, and he reveals a lot of great advice when it comes to growing hydroponically. If you want to see short, bite-sized clips of these episodes, search Garden Talk Clips on YouTube. I also have a gardening channel where I have over 130 videos showing the plants that I've grown. I'll have both of those channels linked down in the YouTube description section below. One of my goals for this podcast is to bring free information about gardening to the general public. That being said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's episode who helped make that goal possible. Thanks to AEC Infinity for sponsoring this episode. Check out their Ion Frame LED grow lights, which have the latest Samsung Evo LEDs. These grow lights include a schedule controller that features 10 brightness levels, dimming, and a sunrise-sunset feature. Click the link in the description section below so you can learn more about their Ion Frame LED grow lights, and the discount code MrGrowIt15 works on both Amazon and their website, acinfinity.com. Happy Hydro. They have some of the best complete beginner grow kits on the market today. Their kits include a grow tent, grow light, ventilation system, grow pots, soil, nutrients, and more. They have 36 different kits in their beginner category and also have advanced kits, cheap kits, and kits that include an auto watering system. Go to happyhydro.com, link in the description, and use the discount code MrGrow during checkout to save on your order. Stash Blend. Stash Blend is a 2-1-5 plant additive that can be used with synthetic bottled nutrients or in living soil systems. Simply mix half teaspoon of Stash Blend into a gallon of water, then water your plants with it. Ingredients include corn steep liquor, seaweed extract, humic acid, beneficial bacteria, silica, and mycorrhizal fungi. Check it out at stashblend.com, link in the description section below, and use the discount code THESTASH. And we are back. Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast. Today I am joined with Mr. Nice Guy. How are you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, Chris?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on. Did you happen to get your name from that 1997 Jackie Chan movie, Mr. Nice Guy, where the Chinese chef accidentally gets involved with a news reporter who filmed a drug bust that went airy and is now being chased by gangs who are trying to get the videotape? Read that plot right then and there.
pretty close on the genre, at least. I mean, it was in the 90s, but I don't know if you've seen Half-Baked, maybe, but the delivery service with Mr. Nice Guy Deliveries kind of stole it off them.
Oh, that's funny. That's where you got it from. Well, thanks for coming on to the podcast today. We're going to talk all about hydroponics, which is really your bread and butter, DIY. Let's get into all of that. You have a lot of experience there. Can you first tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got into gardening?
Yeah, most definitely. If anything, my background isn't too, focused on like horticulture or growing or anything like that. A lot of it is DIY. I learn and do a lot of research between what I know and how I can apply it. So a lot of my experience from work, not to mention I grew up, you know, at a young age working like, you know, construction, asphalt, framing. I did a lot of different like physical kind of jobs growing up. So I've used that to apply it to, you know, nowadays I'm gardening and fixing my house. I grew up here in Cali, Southern California. So you can imagine the weather is not too crazy, but it does kind of shift up and down. I mean, like I mentioned, a lot of my DIY goes into my experience through life. And I mean, I've been working on cars, computers, electronics ever since I was a little kid, kind of mentioning and applying that where I need it and where it can be used most efficiently. I look up to growers like yourself on YouTube ever since I started, Mr. Canuck. I don't know if you watched Debaco or, I mean, we love Mr. Bugby, if anything, kind of on my feet on a daily. So I'm an everyday learner. So if I could apply it to what I, you know, love as a hobby or, you know, as a grower or gardener, that I try to, you know, be the best I can. I mean, when it comes to gardening, I guess I really started gardening when I first purchased my home. That was a few years ago, I mean, with my wife, and we have a lot of, you know, backyard space to do so. We have avocados, we've even tried growing watermelons, potatoes, assortment of tomatoes, if you want to call that. Kids love doing that. My daughter loves picking those and growing them herself. I have a mandarin tree. I'm trying to grow a lemon tree so I can have the necessity, you know. Everyone's backyard, a kind of dream for that same reason. And then I have my seasonal medicinal plant that's outside. For the most part, it's kind of derivative of my indoor stuff that I have, and I push it out there when the season's right.
And now, what would you say is your overall style of gardening? Are you indoor, outdoor, organics, synthetics, soil, cocoa? What's your style?
I would imagine my style of gardening would pertain mostly to indoor hydroponics, where I use different methods of growing for different growth stages. I use cocoa, rock wool, hydrogen. I also use synthetic blends, especially since it's a hydroponic system. It needs to be clean. You can't have too many things, any buildup of algae or film, and you know, causing the flow to stop going one way or the other. I work a lot with a recirculating system, so I need the flow to be constant and consistent. Let me see here. I'm trying to maintain a perpetual grow. So I have two different tents indoors that I have, like, my seedlings, my cuts, my fresh cuts I have on one side, and when they're rooted enough and big enough to move it to my bigger tent, my next tent over, and I have my end stages of, like, vegetation and flowering at the end of it, in there, at least, and repeat the process as I take cuts that I need, and get tired of the cultivar, I kind of go on a search for another mother, you know.
So mostly hydroponics, indoors. Perfect. That's exactly what we're talking about today. And I know you like to get into the DIY side of things. You built your own DWC system. Let's break it down a little bit for the beginners first. Some people might not know what DWC is, or also are DWC. Can you explain what both of those things are?
Well, DWC, or you know, deep water culture, more or less a form of hydroponics, similar to, like, I don't know if I know you're familiar with the Kraky method. You know, simple thing is like having a jar and, you know, roots are hanging into the water and it kind of depletes the nutrients as it grows. Deep water culture is more passive, less passive, for that same reason. It requires that you implicate oxygen so you can add to the roots for that same reason. And, you know, that's kind of the difference between overwatering your plants and underwatering them. And it's definitely capable of doing so within deep water culture as well. In a nutshell, the plant is suspended in a neutral, like, medium with its roots mostly hanging out in the container to take the nutrient water up. And at the same time, you have, like I mentioned, some oxygen being aerated up from an air stone, or depending on how big you have your setup, it should draw some micro bubbles up there and keep the oxygen going, keeping the plant healthy and giving it some air to breathe. And then differ to maybe a RDWC, a recirculating deep water culture. In my, let's say, situation, I have like a kind of three plant setup where I have all the buckets kind of interconnected with PVC tubing. That'll give it a nice flow between all the same water flowing between the three plants. It'll make it so I don't have to refill or maintain individually those plants, those same plants. And to be honest, like, you know, when you're doing like a deep water culture or like, you know, something that's all connected, you want to kind of keep to the same kind of like plant or cultivar, just so it doesn't get too different in growth rate or like things you have to kind of like let's say maybe manipulate the different nutrients that you have for a plant. So some plants like. They're very temperamental, you know this, and depending on where they come from, they have different, means to uptake nutrients. I mean, for the most part, the two biggest differences between the deep water culture and, you know, recirculating is the passing of the water between the tubes. I mean, it can be anywhere from, you know, simple, like, vinyl tubing, or you can go PVC tubing. I mean, I've seen setups where they have anywhere from inch thick to pipes to like 3 inches. So you can go anywhere from there. To be honest, it's not the biggest difference if you have a smaller setup, but the higher flow would be kind of, it will circulate a lot of the nutrients and keep it like not idle. It won't be sitting there and kind of like building a film or anything of the sort. And that's not usually the case with like deep water culture. Usually the water is like fluctuating a lot.
Got it. And so arguably, our DWC is a little bit easier for the regions you mentioned. There's a reservoir and things are recirculating through multiple plants, and you really just have that one control versus DWC, kind of like individual buckets, right? And you got to fill up individual buckets and manage the nutrients for each individual plant. But like you mentioned, it has a downsides for a recirculating system. If you've got all different cultivars in there and they have kind of different nutrient uptake, it can be finicky, right? You can have some plants that are perfectly healthy and others that are deficient. So yeah, there's definitely some pros and cons to both of those methods. And that's pretty cool that you do the RDWC method. And I know that you actually built your own setup. Can you talk to us about the DIY hydroponic recirculating system that you set up?
Well, for my setups, for the most part, I like to have a basis and, before I build, so I can have some expectations at the end. A lot of it does pertain to budget and the space I have to work with, and more or less trying to maximize the usages of what I have already and what I need to get. With my 2x4 design, I designed a 3-plant RDWC system. I also kind of implicated a waterfall to get like top roots some moisture as well. Those are kind of an idea of a bubble ponics kind of a system where you have a waterfall and then you give some nutrients to the top roots so they can expand through the oxygen gap between the bubbles coming from the bottom of the water. So you essentially don't want to fill up your water too high. I have a 4-gallon bucket. I merely fill it up like a third. And then it kind of, all the moisture hits the roots anyways, and there's very little dry back. The basics to some deep water cultures require a reservoir, depending on how you go about adding your nutrients. I personally deleted my reservoir and even my chiller for more space within my room. But depending on your situation, I know it's kind of humid where you stay. Water temperatures might be kind of up there. So I can imagine using your chiller would be more optimal for you guys. Unfortunately, I didn't need that, so I kind of pulled it, saved some electricity, and the extra, computer tower that had to sit on the outside of my tents. But here in Cali, I'm pretty good with my water temps at mid-60s sometimes. I mean, the colder the better, not too cold, but colder roots, the better the uptake for the most part. Like I was mentioning earlier about space management, so I do a lot of measurements. I make sure everything does fit, especially with the buckets. They're not easy to find aside from commercial use. You have to go far and wide trying to find these buckets with the proper lids if they don't already come with them. I use Uline. They do sell a lot of commercial materials for job sites and this and that, but anybody can purchase it regardless of your status of wholesaler or being in business. To be honest, I found my buckets at Home Depot. they were sitting on a stack. I guess they were putting flowers in them, and they were there to take. So I'm like, oh, can I have these? I'm going to use them for a project. I'm like, yeah, take a few if you want. They're essentially trash, but there's some nice black buckets that I found lids on Uline for, and I drilled out some holes, added a netting pot on there to hold my rock wool, essentially the plant that's going to be growing in there for the rest of its life. And by the way, my netting pots are anywhere from 8 inches, pretty big ones that sit halfway through the bucket, and I mean, great expansion for my roots, and the rock wool opens up pretty well. I fill the gaps with hydrogen, and it does pretty well with the drainage for that same reason. And as for the flow, I've gone from vinyl tubing to PVC piping. I found different outlets on Uline and even Amazon for that same reason too. Kind of build it properly, make sure everything fits. And for the same reason, you don't want to build something like this and not be sure that's not going to fail. The worst thing in the world is a water leak midway through your grow, and you have to flush and then redo it all over again, dismantle it and find your leak, seal it and go for it. That's kind of the nightmare of hydroponics or deep water culture. It's like filling the bottom of your tent with water, getting that vacuum out.
You mentioned 4-gallon buckets. Why 4-gallon? Would it be better with a larger bucket or smaller? Why 4?
It really depends on, like, again, the spacing that you have. The taller the bucket, I probably wouldn't mind too much, but the 4-gallon bucket height ends anywhere from like a foot and a quarter up, and then they're like maybe 10 inches wide. So it's a great fit for giving the space for the plant to grow upwards, and it doesn't take too much space around it. So I can have piping and other things like different fans and maybe a pump for my water within the tent, more or less a cleaner area.
Now, are you ever concerned of the roots kind of filling up that space? How do you know, like, I guess, plant size to bucket size?
That's kind of like a blessing in, a situation all in itself. Because, like, the more roots, definitely you want to get, everyone wants roots. You want to fill your, even in soil, you want to fill your bucket, your pot over roots as much as you can. At the same time, I have my water flowing through one another, and these roots can get clogged within those pipes. And at the same time, that's why people have bigger pipes, so their roots don't kind of like clog up and affect the next pot over. But yeah, that's a battle all in itself. So like, you want the big roots, but at the same time, you don't want clogs either, because you need that water to flow and not overflow at the same time. My drip, it's taken out of the one of the same buckets that's connected. So it's taking water from the bottom and throwing it on top of each of the other buckets. So it's just going to overflow if I have one in the clog at the same time. So maintaining them is definitely a good idea, keeping an eye on them.
Got it. That makes sense. And then what size tubing or PVC? And how do you kind of determine that? I know you said you're using a 4-gal. Like, what size tubing for the 4-gal? And then is it go by number of plants to the size tubing? Does that relate at all or no?
With this, my most recent build, it was availability. And I would have definitely went bigger tubing. I personally have it at an inch and a half, almost 2 inches. So I would definitely have gone to 2 or 3, but the second part that's needed wasn't always available. So the knuckle that I thread the PVC into, I didn't have the other part to go bigger than what I had. So I'm dealt those cards, so I kind of make the best of it, if anything. But I hope they have a 3-inch like threaded knuckle that I can add to my next setup. I definitely would go bigger for that same reason with the roots and the clogging issues. ABS maybe. It's black versus white. It'll take in less lighting and no buildup of like algae between the tubes. It's thick enough, I believe. So I personally haven't come across it with this tube, but you will with vinyl all day.
Okay, good to know. And then reservoir, if I know you said you're not running a reservoir, but for those that are looking to run a reservoir, how do they determine what size to use?
Reservoir space. Personally, I have, when I did have my reservoir, it was great to have it to the left of my, or whichever side of my tent. With that reservoir out there, you're going to have to find a means to run a line. And you can't run lines horizontally or you know, at an angle or anything like this. For that same reason, you need to have it level to the ground so the water can flow. And a lot of these tents aren't made with, like, you know, outlets at the bottom of the tent. They're usually, like, you know, half a foot up for, like, you know, ducts or cables. So you're going to have to punch some holes to the bottom of your tent and, you know, kind of modify an outlet so you can find a side for your reservoir. And as for the size of it, it really depends on and how much you want to like suspend for your tanks to use. So it's the reservoir and then like an automatic fill. So when your reservoir starts losing water, it starts refilling from the top bucket. And those go anywhere from like 10, 15 gallons. They're convenient as hell, really. You don't have to go inside your tent. Your refills are much easier. I want to say maybe your flushing would probably be more of a pain and kind of clearing out, you know, an extra bucket, especially if your grow is more compact. But I always look for, you know, more efficiency for my turn and, you know, how much more easier it would be. And even if it's the same idea or outcome, I'm probably going to go for the latter end.
And then can you talk to us about, like, pump size? Like, if somebody's building their own system, and I don't know, whether it be a 4-plant system or 8-plant system, like, how do they determine what pump size and how many air stones to kind of put in each bucket?
To be honest, I've always found myself always going bigger the better for some things, or the better quality and brand for that same reason. But there's definitely a minimum of, like, let's say, free air pump. I have a three-plant system with 6-inch flat air stones, and I have one commercial pump with outlets running for all of them. There's definitely smaller versions of them, less loud or more loud for that. It really depends on your situation. General Hydroponics, they make some simple pumps with, like, pre-lit outlets. Amazon has several pumps that they're really affordable, and they come with outlets too. And not, you know, to be honest, they're not as bad. They're just a name, really. They're all pretty remade in the same place. But I personally use a commercial one. It's yay big, and it's very quiet. It has some rubber like feet, so it kind of vibrations go off the floor. It runs 24 hours. I've been running it for several years now. Didn't spend too much on it. Again, it's one of those things I was able to purchase. Like, I think someone had it used, Fallout on someone on Instagram, or not Instagram, on OfferUp. You know, growers fall out all the time, and they kind of give up on a hobby. And I come up on some of these products. Here in California, we have shops that close down on the regular and turn around and have to sell their materials and like, you know, parts. And that's me picking it up on the other end if I could find it, you know.
So you mentioned 8-inch net pots is what you have within the buckets. You use Rockwell and then Hydroton surrounding it. Can you talk to us about kind of using the Rockwell from start to finish? Do you start cuts in it and then kind of have it in your seedling area and then switch it over to the bucket? Or how do you go about that?
I believe Rockwell has gone a long way, especially with tech. There's a brand, Grodan. They're kind of big on their products, but they make different versions. I mean, everyone makes Rockwell, but they actually use their plugs and their 4-inch cubes. I've used bigger ones for it to kind of experiment, but it's not really necessary unless you're going to do like a drip-to-drain kind of like setup. But I start with plugs. They're let's see here. Or, you know, small little cubes. And these are, I insert them into another 4-inch cube as I go. So my seedlings and my fresh cut clones, I drop them in there and kind of dome them up in my tent and get some humidity. You let them get rooted first, and once they're rooted and I get stuff poking out of them, I drop them into another, like, you know, pH ready, like a 4-inch cube. Let that sit in there for a minute, and after a couple of weeks it gets pretty rooted out. I then attract, like, once it's kind of vegetated to a teen, more or less, to a couple feet, I bring over to the next tent over and get a final couple of weeks of vegging so the roots can expand and run the flower. Like I mentioned earlier, they go into the pots, and I kind of fill the gaps with the hydrogen. The hydrogen is great for drainage. At the same time, it's more or less, it's real comparable to a terracotta pot. So they're able to absorb a lot of moisture, and at the same time, like you mentioned, the drainage between it being a pebble lets it flow right through. So I get all right dry backs, and then greater uptake between, like, you know, nutrients.
What do you use for a nutrient lineup?
Currently, for actually the last couple of years, I've been using Athena. They've been pretty consistent, not rocky at all, really. From day one, I've been pretty, haven't really dropped the ball. Like, everything that I put in there, it works pretty to its word. follow the instructions, the guidelines, and if I really wanted to, I've tried experimenting, like bumping up ratios, see if it kind of, you know, messes with the plant or if they like it a little bit more. But I got to different PPMs between in flower stages, and they can go pretty high. If you harden your plants well enough, they can take a lot of salt. For that same reason, I go by PPM. I really don't go by EC. I'm a numbers guy, so I like seeing the numbers that break down pretty good detail. And EC is like 2 points, and I can't really break that down or divide them into, you know, my nutrients that I've mixed into it most recently. But I love it, you know. If anything, I'm thinking of moving over to their salt mix. if I ever expand my op and you know, need more liquid for that same part of it. But I come from other nutrients like psycho. Psycho is good. To be honest, a lot of these nutrients aren't bad at all. None of them are. It's just really their ratio and how they formulate them for these plants to work. And, you know, everybody knows these plants are different. So they're going to take up these nutrients differently. And then that's up to the grower, the gardener, to kind of like fine tune that, their ratios and give the plant what they like. So, you know, a lot of these companies are mentioning, like, here, this is yours. You do with it what you will, and you figure it out. But, you know, they want to make it easy. I mean, they have their charts, and to a basis, it works. But to make it better, it's really up to the grower. And that goes with a lot of variables, you know, conditions, lighting, and exactly what the plant may prefer. But I run Athena, and hopefully I can keep on doing it.
I've heard a lot of good things about Athena. A lot of people seem to be jumping over to Athena and using them just because of the results that you see people getting out of them. And I heard a lot of the good things about ease of use. They make it really easy to use. Now, you mentioned PPM. Are you talking 500 scale or 700 scale? And also, are you adjusting the PPM that you have, that you're giving to your plants throughout the growth cycle, so it gets higher as you go from veg to flower? Or how do you go about that?
I go 500 for the scale, if anything, and by stage, I try to pay attention to what the plant is like and how they react, if they're praying at the time of with enough heat. It does fluctuate from vegetation to flowering. When I find that within flowering, you know, they're lacking a little bit, I kick down some things so they can pick up. But if they're really liking it, I add. Until I see a lacking. If they start showing some bad signs, I definitely take away. But I haven't actually. So I've heard other growers go, several thousand in PPM, like, you know, 3,000 PPM to a point of, like, you know, you don't even imagine that for your plants and how they can really uptake it. But if you have the right setup and your roots are really clean, if they're big enough and they're able to uptake, they will. Finding that plant, finding that mother that, you know, is suitable for such conditions is the, you know, part of the journey. Definitely between my growth cycles, I try to up as much so they can take as much nutrients for that same reason. More or less towards the end, I try to be a little more critical and kind of sensitive to seedlings and even teens at some points, because they're not, I'm not giving them the full effect until they really step into the flowering stage. Especially with their lacking root expansion.
Okay, and then are you changing nutrient? Is it every week where there's kind of like a new ratio that you're kind of increasing week by week? And when you do that change, are you doing any type of like cleaning of the buckets or anything with any cleaning solution, or are you just rinsing them out with water and then putting in the next week's nutrient mix in?
With my water, at least, I use purified water like everyone should. Unfortunately, I have like a purifying system, which I should actually. Every hydroponics person should have a filtration system, especially if you're growing. Clean water is necessary, especially if you're drinking or consuming anything from it. My water is between my buckets and more or less flushing between cycles. I definitely do that. So if I'm ever going from vegetation to a flowering or fruiting stage, all that water is going out, being dumped into my outdoor grows and reused one way or the other. The buckets are then like rinsed out with that same water, again thrown into the outside grow stuff. I don't do full flushes. If that's one of the questions, I'm sorry. Towards the end, with what research I've learned, I mean, even Bruce Bugbee, it was like, I mean, there's no results after the fact. You're kind of deteriorating. Doing that, even the 3 days after that flush, a lot of this bro science is kind of going out the door. And it's initially when I started growing, I try to like throw that, use to all the stuff that I can imagine that, you know, would make my plant bigger or grow more vigorously. And a lot of it wasn't consistent enough for me to continue to keep on doing it. So really, I'm just following directions into what my nutrient line asks for. And if it does require that I flush, It hasn't really, but there are definitely things to do. So there's definitely means to flush aside from pulling out, you know, excess nutrients from your plants. If you're changing up from different cycles, like I mentioned, you definitely want to have a clean start and not have anything behind that can mix into what you're putting in new. If I find that there's something lacking within my mix, I'll get runoff, test the runoff, and see how it looks on my tester, opposed to how it's running within the system. This may kind of confuse a lot of people when they're testing water that's inside the system, because the air stone kind of makes pH levels fluctuate. So pull your water out, test the runoff. Don't test your stuff in motion, because a lot of it running around is going to mess with your testers, and it'll kind of mess you up on paper. But yeah, for my last question, I raised up my nutrient levels, my PPM between cycles. With that being said, I don't want to mess up my numbers that I already put down and kind of add to another one. I will top off my levels with the same nutrients as they're growing, but I don't mix different nutrients to fill it up. It's definitely fleshed out, and we start fresh when we go to a new cycle.
Got it. Now, you mentioned you use that nutrient solution on your outdoor plants. Now, how do you get it from, pretty basic question here, but what do you use to get it from your grow tent that are in the buckets on the floor of the grow tent? How do you get that out into your yard? Are you using a shop vac or using a sub pump? Like, how do you remove the water from the buckets?
Initially that was a big question in my head to kind of transfer a lot of liquid. I've got myself some bigger containers, blue containers, to fill the liquid with. But at the same time, yes, I do use a shop vac, a wet dry vac, and I pull out all the water, and then it's another breakdown between the system and having to pull it out and rinse it out really quickly. The rinsing is a good thing, and I really promote the whole rinsing part of it, because you don't want any clogs, you don't want any leaks. You want to make sure that your system is still consistent to work the next cycle and you know, longer. My drip system, it clogs a lot. The sedative, the sediment from the salt buildup, the only way to clear that stuff, the lines is another solution to add to your water, which you don't want to do. You don't want to add a solution to clear your lines that's going to also go into your plants. Take it out and do it in another time, and keep it running as you can. And as my plants are suspended out of the water while I'm cleaning, they're getting dried back, and they're still wet. Nothing happens to them. They're still in their light. But maintaining is a big deal, especially with, you know, anything hydroponic, any system that you want to run consistently, like a car. You want to make sure that car has gas and oil. You want to make sure your system is clean and clear of salts. The buildup does happen, and everything is dirty. You wash your dishes for a reason. You don't want to wash your pots or your buckets from the same things you're going to eat off of.
That makes sense. So we talked about PPM, but we didn't talk about pH yet. Can you talk about pH a little bit, like what you typically aim for on a week-to-week basis?
I'm always trying to sit between 6.5 and at most 7 when it comes to my hydro water flowing. I always started at zero PPM when I have fresh water, and it's always tested and mixed in before I drop it all in there. I buffer my pH with Athena's Balance, so anything that has silica in it will kind of raise your pH, and you can work it out from there. So you're always adding your silica first, and then building out from there, and then kind of fine tuning between where you want to be at on your pH and your PPM. I go pretty light with my seedlings and anything in vegetation. More or less, I just want to keep my veg stuff like consistent and expand on root zones and then move it over. So when it comes to like my pH, it does definitely need to be consistent, because in my veg tent, everything is pure rock wool. It's all like feed to drain, so they're sitting in trays, so I gotta pay attention. I see those guys every day. I want to make sure that dry back is not too long and are able to like open up their roots and for the same part, like lighting isn't building too much algae on anything. So maintaining that is kind of revolves around the pH, because if something else goes bad, it may fluctuate the pH, and then I have to flush that. And it's even more difficult when you're working with a rockwool. You can't really flush the rockwool unless you sit over water for countless times, and that's a big headache. You almost want to start over again and just, you know, pull it out and drop it in another queue, but, you know, it's definitely not as easy as you think.
Got it. Now on the topic of DIY, you also created a DIY double trellis net. Can you talk to us how you went about doing that?
That net, yeah. That actually expanded from one of my first couple of grows. I had a bigger tent. It was a 5x5 instead of my 2x4s. I broke it down too. I kind of saw an example from like Mr. Canuck when I was watching his videos. A lot of it, he gets really, really tall plants, but they're always flopping around. even if he has a single trellis, and they just flop around. So, I mean, I imagine, like, why not have a double trellis? Run one, and then when it surpasses that one, run the second one. I mean, you're always going to have stragglers at the bottom that you're going to want to, like, kind of move over to the corner or to a point where you have lighting. I know nowadays there's a lot of, like, side lights or stuff you can add to the bottom of your tent to add some sun, but not everyone has that same thing. So you want to train. I'm big on training. And it comes to like positioning your plants or even like kind of like bonsaiing them to a point where they lay down on you, you know. My first grow, I had one plant that was, you know, filled the whole 5x5 tent, and I was running that double trellis where I can get them laying sideways toward the end of the other end of the plant, and it grew out big. It was my first grow, and I put like slightly little than 500, I still have a little bit left over from years ago, if anything. But the trellis net is definitely a big help. PVC piping, it's lightweight, it's really like flexible. You can put it and move around as you please. Just be good with your measurements. You know, materials aren't too costly when it comes to things like that. The reason I built my own, I mean, not stacking two on top of one another, it's another cost-effective kind of thing. I mean, if you notice how much these things cost online, you're mostly paying for the shipping. For instance, I love Gorilla Goat 10, and clearly they sell everything nowadays. It's like AC Infinity, they're a kind of one-stop shop. Gorilla Goat 10 is here in California. I wanted to buy a $20 trellis net, and it was another, like, you know, $25 or $30 to ship it over to me. I'm like, can I pick it up? It's right here in Los Angeles. Like, unfortunately, no, we can't. So that was my turnaround to go to Home Depot. It was like another less 5 miles, and, you know, go build my own with some string. Or you can go on Amazon, pick up the trellis net and run it over a frame of your own. It's pretty basic, but I mean, it goes without saying, like, you really just have to put yourself forward and have to, you know, want to make these things and not have to wait for shipping or, you know, paying someone else to make it for you. And I kind of push that, you know, across the board. We've seen a lot of things I do, whether it's growing or fixing a car. If I can't fix it, if I don't know 100% sure, I'm not going to do it. But if I can, I'm going to attempt, but, you know, without any loss for the most part.
You can certainly save a bunch of money doing it DIY, and I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people go for it, you know, not just because they're good with their hands, but because it's going to save them money as well. So for the PVC double trellis, what size PVC, and then when you're connected them and they have, what's it called, the elbow pieces, are you putting is there any like glue or any sealant or anything that connects it to make sure everything locks in place or what?
It really depends on you. If you wanted to have like a permanent fixture, yeah, there is a PVC adhesive that specifically for PVC, so the plastic can stick to one another. And then they also have like threaded joints that you can get where you can just, you know, more screw them in there and then reuse them again later. I prefer more like the threaded joints. So if you ever wanted to break down that same trellis, you can. And I did that same thing. I had a big 5x5 trellis that I broke down, and I made a 3x3 trellis to fit a shower grow, and I just moved it around. I try to reuse as much as I can, and I mean, I may not have a 5x5 in there, but, you know, now I have another opportunity to use it for my small 3x3. But yeah, it's for putting it together, it's really to your spec. So if you plan on reusing it, don't go the permanent route. Shoot for a thread that you can screw it in and unscrew it. And if you find that you're gonna, it's something going to be a staple within that same tin, that's not going to change. Go ahead and get an adhesive. It smells at first, but it's non-toxic. It's not going to bother your plants. It'll set it and you can forget it for the most part.
Good to know. And then for the actual thread that is run, the ones I've seen online of people doing it, they're basically just taking screws and then putting it into the side of the PVC at a certain spacing, and then they're using the twine or string and running it up and down to make squares. Is that pretty much how you do it, or like what's your method of that part?
I want to say my Mark One, my first prototype, I definitely did the whole eyelet screws into the PVC. It definitely is more tedious of work. You also have to make sure your measurements are on point with how big you want the squares. So when I made my double trellis, I did like a 4-inch square to a 6-inch square, so it can kind of like open up between, you know, how it expands. With the eyelet screws that you're going to put in there, you're kind of going to have to play Spider-Man and go end to end. And if, you know, one line kind of is loosened, then you're going to have like a floppy area for that same reason. I found that getting the nylon ones on Amazon are just as good. And you're going to find that zip ties are going to be your best friend. And that goes across the board too, between your whole grove. Zip ties are a savior. Get that zip tie and just ratchet it on there between the right net. And you can modify the net as big as it is and cut it. It's no big deal. Those things are like $7 on Amazon. People also use, like, you know, wood for their framing, like 2x4s. I mean, they have to screw it more properly. It's not lightweight. But I like hanging my trellis from the top of my tin so I can kind of, like, adjust it as I please.
That makes sense. Yeah, it sounds like it's a lot easier to just buy the nylon net and then zip tie it to the PVC piping. Save a bunch of time there, I'm sure.
Yeah, and headaches, yeah.
So for all these DIY projects, you know, whether it be the hydroponic setup you have or the DIY double trellis, what are some of the problems that you've come across and how did you resolve them? You've already kind of talked a little bit about the water leak and clogged pipes. Not sure if you can expand on that at all or if there's anything else that comes to mind.
And to be honest, those are kind of the biggest nightmares, the leaks and not being around when the leak happens. I mean, there's several things that could happen between a hydroponic setup because you get to a point where you want a lot of things to be automated. So if you want to set it and forget it, walk out of the room and make sure everything's still running, you want to make sure everything's confirmed working. To walk out of the room and then you get a power outage and now all of a sudden, you know, half your pumps aren't going, your roots are sitting in water for this amount of time, and it's so idle, and it just builds up bacteria that you don't want. I mean, that's a crucial, you know, hold down for you. When you come back to a room that's not on anymore, and you have to run a breaker in the back to turn it back on. Some people aren't keen to those things. They're like, then they're freaking out. Like, they're calling all their friends, and like, shit, my power's off. How do you turn it back on? I mean, there's several things. Power running out, weather conditions. California is pretty upset in weather. It kind of changes every day. I'm lucky to have the sun out today, but like the last few days it was just raining. We're in February. I could say that anything that kind of affects the household or the room kind of affects the environment on the inside. With things turning off on you or things not working when you're away from it. I mean, for that same reason, that's why I have cameras within my tents. I keep an eye on them 24/7. It's almost like I wish I had a camera on my kid for that same reason. Put a camera on top of her head so I know what she's doing this whole time. I wouldn't have to worry so much. But these are other kids that can't fend for themselves and get sick if something touches them wrong. So it's definitely a hobby, and put yourself in the position to be more caring or more observant to things that you want to, you know, love and pay attention to, especially if you get to, you know, you get to have your cake and eat it too at the end. And that goes across the board with all plants. You know, who doesn't like an apple from their own tree? let me see here, but you know, with these ideas of things, walking into the problems, the things that you want to, you know, most worry about, things that are things that are out of your hands. If you have things running automatically, then you can have, like, you know, a slight, you know, slight weight lifted off your shoulder because you know it's working. The cameras help a lot because I can pay attention from a distance, especially if I can hear things running. Like, okay, that's a good sign. If all of a sudden I get a notification that my camera's off or it's not working, either somebody's robbing me or or my stuff all turned off and I'm going to come back to a quiet room. And then I don't have to figure it out. And when you're away, it's probably because you're out, like, doing something, or, you know, it's at night. So when you come home, it's like it's at the end of the day and you have to deal with a whole bunch of stuff. So that's kind of the nightmare you don't want to walk into or expect when having an automated system, you know, that's supposed to work on its own. But you can keep away from all that stuff by foreseeing it. Imagine it before you're doing your build. Like, I'm not gonna have any leaks ever, because I triple double check my water sources and make sure that it flows in the right places. I put high pressure on it, on the tubes with a hose to make sure nothing comes out. Just triple double checking your stuff will definitely keep you out of the realm of having to worry about it. But always that thing in the back of your head, like, it's gonna happen. No one is safe from, you know, mishaps. It's like the law of life. even if you're running through soil, there's always something that could, you know, surprise you through pest or you know, lacking management, weather conditions, things that you're not sure that you can expect when you come back from, you know, whatever you're doing. But personally, I maybe have like a water phobia, but of it being everywhere. Just the fact that there's a lot of electronics around it, it's like playing with fire eventually.
I can see how that could be scary for some people, for sure. But the camera thing that you mentioned is pretty good idea of, you know, listening to the camera to see your equipment still kind of sounds like it's still on, you know? I don't have cameras in my grow yet. I'm looking to actually put cameras in my grow. What brand do you use?
Actually, I use these Blink cameras. They're not too expensive. I'm pretty sure you can find them like $25 a pop. And then you can get some mounts from Amazon where you can kind of angle them as you please. And within my two 2x4s, I have them pointed down and I have a full coverage where I can kind of zoom in and out. It has two-way sound, so you can hear the sound coming back out. And you can imagine if there was somebody else in your room, you can talk to them and they can talk back as well. It's great on surveillance. I mean, to be honest, when I first purchased my house, surveillance was a big deal. So I covered my house in like Ring cams, and I found these Blink cameras on the way over. I'm like, hey, these are inexpensive. Pop them to my tents, and you know, I can watch everything. I mean, eyes on me, vice versa.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to have to get cameras going in my tent soon. Well, we talked about quite a bit here in this talk today in regards to DIY and hydroponics. Let's wrap things up. Tell the listeners how they can find you. And is there anything upcoming in the future that you have going on that you want to talk about?
You can always kind of catch me on Instagram or even YouTube. I go by Highly Motivated Hydroponics. Mr. Nice Guy, if anything. YouTube and Instagram. If anything, I have future girls coming up trying to find a new mother to move over into their next tent. This hunt is always the biggest thing between any kind of like a gardener, between whatever cultivar, but trying to find the best one and keep them moving is kind of the idea right now. Not much tech update, to be honest. I'm kind of settled where I'm at, but if anything new comes out, I'm definitely going to be on top of it. For the most part, I like a lot of the brands that I'm using: AC Infinity, Gavita. I mean, they're pretty great and consistent. Can't say there's anything the matter with them, but, you know, watch out for my videos and my posts, and you can see some updates and where I'm going at with it, and hopefully it expands and kind of enjoy the videos or the content, you know.
Awesome. Well, I'll definitely have a link to Mr. Nice Guy's channel down in the YouTube description section below, so you guys can easily navigate to that. And if you're listening on one of the podcast platforms, just search for him, Highly Motivated Hydro. His channel should pop right up, and then you'll be able to tune into his content. Mr. Nice Guy, thanks so much for coming on today and talking about hydroponics and DIY. I definitely learned a few things myself. I'm just getting into DWC, so there's definitely some things here in this talk that I'm going to have takeaways for me, and I might actually hit you up with some additional questions behind the scenes if I have any. So thanks so much, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Oh, thank you, man. I'm glad to be here. Hope I'll talk to you back then. Thanks a lot, man.
Peace out, everyone. Catch you in the next episode.